District meeting. This is June 22nd, 2016. Can I ask Celia for a roll call vote, please?
Director Angelo?
Here.
Director Blackburn?
Here.
Director Guerrero?
Here.
Vice President White?
Here.
President Moosey?
Here. Karen, can I ask you to lead us in a flag salute?
Attention, salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks. Okay, does anybody have any modifications, alternatives to the budget? I mean, the agenda? Speak now or forever hold your peace. Okay.
Madam President?
Yes, sir.
We do and have handed out and have copies available on the table as well. Modifications to the minutes, the summary minutes for the June 8th, 2016 meetings that are on the agenda today for approval. The modification is shown in red with the red line strikeout. Item number 12, closed session. We had previously cited that the closed session item related to the Santa Maria groundwater basin, but in fact it was related to a claim item.
So with this...
So that modification. So at the during the motions for the consent agenda, the appropriate action would be as modified?
Correct.
I so move.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain? Passes 5-0. Thank you for pointing that out to us. Okay. At this time,
and
we're going
to... Just to quickly clarify, the motion and the approval right now was the modification of
yes,
the agenda.
Correct.
Yes, it's modified.
So we'll notice it at consent.
Right.
All right, so moving right along, at this time, this is for public comment for items that are not on the agenda tonight. So if we have anybody who'd like to speak to items that are not on the agenda, this is the time. Hearing none, we're going to move right along to special presentations and reports. Mr. Ogren, do you think that we should keep the sheriff's on here or maybe remove it and just put it on as needed?
I think it's appropriate to keep it on there, just especially in case there's an event that comes up after the agenda is published but before your meeting that the sheriff might want to come out and talk about. I have a task in front of me, though, which is to reach out to Commander Donovan and request like a quarterly review. I have not done that yet, but I will do so.
Can we then maybe move, since we always have a field supervisor's report, can we move that to the top? Five Cities Fire Authority second?
Certainly.
You third, and then the sheriff's last?
Oh, I never like to have the sheriff last on the agenda, but if that's your board's pleasure. I know who's got
our
backs covered.
I think of you as the wrap-up person. So
yeah, there you go.
Third. I mean, if they show up, then we'll certainly move them back to the top.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Tony, at this time, will you give us an update on how the town's doing?
Good evening, Board. Tony Maricino.
Hey, Tony.
For the past couple of weeks, we've had 8 work orders, 5 USAs, 10 customer service calls. We had 4 call-outs, and they were just last weekend due to multiple parks' line being broken. Lines were Porticos had a line break. 2300 Cienega had a line break last weekend. All roughly 2 on Saturday, 2 on Sunday. The mobile home park on 24th Street had a line break. Just multiple breaks in these parks. So basically, we're just there to shut the water off, have them repair it, and we'll turn it back on for them because our responsibility really ends at the meter, the master meter at the street, except for 2300. That's the park you guys are all aware about with the hose clamps. But luckily, it was on the customer's side, not ours, you know, as for doing physical work.
So do you guys have any, like, speculations as to why these kind of clustered and broke all about the same time?
The lady had her son trying to do an irrigation. He snapped a line.
Oh.
The other one happened at 2:45 in the morning, irrigation. 2300, that happens periodically, and it will continue to happen. And the last call out was for a meter lid. Somebody took a meter lid and threw it inside the box, kind of cockeyed. Got a phone call on that. It was in the sidewalk. I said it was a safety issue. So we're continuing to valve turn quite a bit. Still raising meter boxes and concreting them in the alleyways. We did about 15 of those. Fixing an injector at well 8. Quite a few job walks lately regarding CHC and the avocado ranch. And they've all started their projects currently. Paso and Elm Street, all the valves and manholes, they've all been raised. The paving's done.
Great.
Basically, all the thing they have to do is do some of the striping, some of the painting. But everything else is back to normal for us. Continued a few more sewer laterals, vacuumed out the lift station. And Friday morning at 03 in the morning, we're going to do some line flushing on 25th Street, 24th Street, and Wilmar, just to get the water quality up a little better. So we'll be out there at 3 in the morning flushing before hopefully too many people wake up and it calms down. You know, we might get a couple dirty water complaints maybe, but we got to do a little bit of flushing this Friday morning.
Okay.
And then as for state water deliveries year to date, we're at 265 acre feet. We've only pumped 0.40 acre feet. And Lopez is currently at 28.3%, which is 13,954 acre feet.
What did you say, Lopez? Was that again?
28.3%. Okay. That's as of today.
Okay. Long, hot summer.
It is.
It is.
But that's all for me. Any questions?
Does the board have any questions? No?
No, thank you, Tony.
All right, okay. Thank you.
All right. Does anybody from the audience have any questions on this item? No? Okay. Pretty quiet tonight, actually. Feels like, you know, there's so much going on around the country this year. It's quiet in Oceano. That's good. Oh, okay. But that's not wood.
She's knocking on the formica.
All right.
Good enough for Oceano.
Karen, do you want to give the Five Cities Fire Authority
yeah.
Summary?
Well, the big thing is we approved our budget, but another thing that I thought would be of interest, we now have officially, after much negotiations by our attorney, we now, Five Cities Fire Authority is now trademarked nationally, so we are the Five Cities Fire Authority. We couldn't trademark the logo because the artist who did it already has that protected. But the Five Cities Fire Authority name is now. And another thing, we did approve the budget, which are you going to go through it or should I?
Oh. Go ahead.
And I haven't opened up to where I was supposed to be. It's a rather tight budget of about, I could read budgets, $4.184 million. It keeps us going in the way we're going, and we will now, we also have on order a replacement fire engine, and we've increased our maintenance costs for our aging fleet by $25,000, and I think that's the highlights, kind of. Through the year, the fire chief listed a bunch of things that were completed, including some strategic planning, and we've done a lot of work on interagency collaboration and also communications. We have launched a smartphone application, FIV Dispatch, which smartphone owners, and I don't know much about this, you may have to phone the fire department, but when calls go out on a smartphone, you can find out exactly what the calls are, and general information about them. So when you hear the sirens go, you can kick your smartphone into gear and find out what's going on. And that's about it. We've done quite a bit, and I know this last weekend we've had, until today, we had a crew at the Sherpa fire, and then Saturday night, they had a very bad structure fire in San Luis Obispo, and one of our trucks went there with the old barbecue on the wooden deck, blew through, destroyed the house, blew into the neighbor's houses. It was at Laguna Lake, and the wind was blowing about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Took down live power lines that were smarking around, and grass was burning, trees were burning, a house burned up. It was pretty scary for a while. And because Cal Fire was at the Sherpa Fire, we were called to back up San Luis Fire Department on that. And that's the second time, because that store on High Guerra Street, we also responded to that one.
Right, the sandwich shop?
Is that the one?
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you, Karen.
Mr. Ogren.
President Lucy. My comments tonight are going to be pretty limited, but very important, because tonight I get the pleasure of introducing Carrie Cassiola. Carrie is our business and accounting manager, and she started on Monday and is already, you know, fully engaged in the job, and wanted to make sure to give her the opportunity to say hello to the board.
Great.
Hi, Carrie. Hi, I look forward to meeting you guys. Only my third day, but happy to be here.
We met Monday.
Oh, yeah, we met Monday.
You met Jennifer as well.
Yeah.
Welcome aboard, Carrie.
Thank you.
Welcome. I think welcome home, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Also, my fourth day back, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you relocated back here? Or
from San Diego.
Yeah.
Yeah, loving the commute. So.
Yeah, Carrie graduated locally from high school in 2006. Went down to the University of San Diego and got her accounting degree in 2010.
Mm-hmm. That's where all the smart people go. I just like to
go Toreros.
With Toreros.
Okay, disclosure. Matt went to UST.
Disclosure. I went to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo.
There you go. And glad to have Carrie on board.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, welcome, Carrie.
We'll see a lot of each other.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us what Zone 3 is up to, Mr. Ogren.
I have not had a Zone 3 meeting, and don't have an update on Zone 3 then.
Okay, good. That's always sometimes that's a good sign. Okay.
No emergencies, the report.
Is there anybody who wants to speak on item number 6, A, B, or C? This is the time.
Well, except.
But I'll do B, don't worry.
All right.
I just wanted to put it out there. You know, I just get accused of not calling public comment enough. So I thought I'd do an overkill tonight. So let's move on to the Board of Directors and Outside Committee reports. Let's start with Mr. Guerrero.
I have no outside committee report.
Do you network with anybody? Do you work in your garage, or?
My plums came right. The jacaranda's beautiful.
The peacocks are back.
Yeah, they are, and there's babies this year. We went quite a few years without babies for the peacocks, and now we've got some babies. So.
Coyotes are back to eat the peacocks.
They've been there every night, yes. Every night we got to lock the animals in. So.
Mm, yeah.
Coyotes are out.
Okay. Director White.
Oh, yeah, I've got a couple of things. The first one really isn't, it's kind of just for information because I haven't heard anything about it. But on June 14th, the Lucy M. R. Unified School District Board of Directors voted to have a bond election on November ballot. And it's a tidy little thing. It's $170 million for school refurbishment. And I'm surprised that nobody's heard anything about it, but just that's one of the things that's going to be on the November ballot. That's number one. Number two, we had a fire meeting, but I already covered that. Number three, this here, is... I'm sorry. Yesterday there was a Zone 11A meeting, advisory meeting, and we had quite a bit of reports. Number one, in regard to the trash cleanup in the creek, Public Works is continuing to monitor the area. They've placed lots of no trespassing sign, and there is a homeless camp underneath the 22nd Street Bridge, and this camp will be cleaned up during the willow trimming work that will occur later this summer, after August 15th. They'll start the creek cleanup after August 15th. They have to wait for the bird nesting season. And one of the big challenges, we will not have goats this year because they have hemlock, and they're having to eradicate the hemlock by hand. And because it's poisonous to the goats, they can't let the goats go. Mm-hmm. But so the hand... weed abatement, the program will be done by hand crews starting that time. And they're still waiting. We are still waiting for permits for the Arroyo Grande Creek cleanup project, the major cleanups desilting project. They're waiting for a biological opinion by the National Marine Fisheries Service, which will allow the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to issue a Section 404 permit. The National Marine Fisheries said they would have that permit by December 2015. Then they said they would have it by June 27th of this year. And now there's no date set for when that permit might come. And so everything is sitting, and it's been waiting for several years, and it continues to wait. So it would be nice to somehow get the creek bed cleaned up and reduce the flooding threat, but we just wait for the government. Thank you.
Karen, is there anything that the communities can do to encourage them to get off the stick and do something?
Well, the county is about to, they're going to go ahead and contact, it's a federal thing, so they're going to go ahead and contact CAPS and Monning. Okay. And I believe Monning is going to be here on Friday.
Friday.
Okay.
So, yes, they're trying everything they can do. They are pushing on everything to get this one biological opinion. It's like a permit, actually. Nobody can do anything until that is in hand from this group.
Yeah,
so
they're dragging their feet again.
Yeah.
Continuous.
The zone has always been challenged as far as getting attention.
It's frustrating,
and it's
yeah.
years and years and years to creep through. That's sad.
Mm-hmm. President Lucy, I'm sorry. Can I piggyback on a comment that Vice President White was making? Thank you. Ms. White mentioned the bond, and wanted to bring up a couple of things. I don't know if we had mentioned, but efforts with the bond started from a number of years ago in the evaluation of the school district facilities. Obviously, this has been a multi-year process. I was involved in it a number of years ago when they were kicking it off. That was prior to any discussion of the bond at that point. But the other thing, too, was I don't know if we mentioned it before, but we had talked about it a couple of months back with the gerrymandering and the redistricting. So I want to – I don't know if we ever reported back, but I'm very pleased to report back that Oceano did save its seat on the school board.
All right.
That the school board did listen, and I think it was, 6-1 vote? 5-2. 5-2, yes. 5-2 vote to adopt the plan that was modified and then pushed by the public that was there, and it looks like we have some much fairer, more proportional representation than currently exists, and much fairer, more proportional than what was being proposed by eliminating a voice for Oceano. And so I'm very pleased that we've maintained that. So.
Yeah, I actually attended that Lucia Moore meeting too, and you know, it's supposed to go to construction for classrooms and things like that, but there was a huge lobbying effort by the athletics department, and that truly just dominated the whole entire meeting, and so very few people spoke for, you know, it, nobody opposed it in that room. They wouldn't dare, you know, but there were, you know, the athletic department was pushing very, very hard, and they had organized the parents and all that stuff. So,
Thank you.
I'm glad you brought that up, Karen.
Yeah.
Mr. Ogren, did you have something you wanted to say on, I think, the five cities or something?
Zone 1 and 1A?
Zone 1 and 1A, okay.
Yeah, my thought on that one is that timing might warrant a letter-writing campaign.
Mm.
So I'll be glad to talk with the county and maybe put a letter on a subsequent agenda item that could be sent to our federal representatives. I think for letters from individual members of the public would also be beneficial at this time. We know that we have some residents specifically who are at risk of flooding and have flooded, and perhaps even the South County Sanitation District, since they are just right there on the levee system.
Right there.
Adjacent to the levees. So given the delays from the federal agencies and the county's recent status update, it would certainly seem appropriate in the very near future to initiate some letter writing.
Karen, do you think it would be of value to get the general manager for the sanitation district?
He was at the meeting yesterday.
Great.
He was at the meeting and is joining in on
pushing.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
That's a really good idea. Would you be willing to start a letter?
Yeah, I'll talk with the county. I had lunch with Mr. Gebhardt today, and he, in addition to his capacity at the sanitation district, and when he was down in Ventura County, he was able to participate in obtaining permits for some of the levee systems down there.
Okay.
So he has some unique experience on this specific issue. And so in terms of constructing some letter writing, I'll coordinate both with the county as well as the sanitation district.
Thank you.
Mr. Huebner is a very impressive resource. I'm incredibly happy with his.
It was very, very nice to have him at the meeting and to be able to meet him.
I look forward to our agencies being able to work in collaboration again.
Yeah, well, the cleanup, of course, some of the challenges with the homeless are right there by his front gate or back gate or somewhere.
Right. All right. Thank you. Jennifer, how about you start?
Director Guerrero and I did attend the Finance Committee meeting on Monday, but we will be going over that later on. So, and that's all I have.
Okay. Lori, do you have anything to report?
Yes. I found an article in the New Times, I think one of those anyway, that they are going to put in a automated weather observation station and the beacon equipment installation, which has been talked about in the past, at the airport. So they're putting it out for bid. So we'll probably get a better beacon rather than blinding everybody, and weather observation, which would be good because most of the weather that we get the news is coming from north of us or south of us. We never say it's going to be windy at the beach like it is in our area, but anyway, it'll give it a little more coverage as far as that goes.
Interesting.
And then Mr. Huffy will have to report the weather in Oceano.
Mr. Stiff? Is that Jason Stiff?
I don't know about the other channels. I'm KSBY loyal.
Okay.
Me too.
And then
that's
CNN.
It.
Okay.
Thank you.
I attended the sanitation district, and I have to echo, I agree that Mr. Huebner is excellent for the sanitation district. He's extremely knowledgeable, and he has the ability to multitask, and I think they're very fortunate to get him. Unfortunately, he's not appreciated by all, but, you know, good people aren't always appreciated by all. So he has an added extra burden of trying to keep people calm and happy and still move a very, very heavy agenda along. We passed the annual budget last meeting. I thought that it was a well-prepared budget. He had just barely started, 90 days ago? He's been there about 90 days, and he'd done the budget. The fine with the regional board is still in the works, but it's moved along, and we'll be able to report fully on that the end of July. There was a rate increase for the sanitation district, so that those funds are starting to come in and go towards redundancy. And I don't know, there hasn't been a lot of discussion on reclamation, but there will be, because I don't think anybody can deny not having a solid plan, particularly if you have as much water as they have being flushed out to the ocean. And then there was a lot of several housekeeping issues that went along with it. I also attended the CSDA meeting Friday. It's held at the Wallace Group, and I want to thank the Wallace Engineering for hosting that meeting every other month, regularly for years and years and years. It's nice to have a permanent place, and it's a good area to network. You know, that's a good group of people. And so Mr. Hutchinson from Public Works came from the county to talk about the organizational chart. Mr. Ogren probably knows much more about that than I do. I just saw a lot of dots. I think that they've expanded. They absorb general services, and so the expansion of Public Works is 300-plus employees now, and it's just monstrous. But Mr. Hutchinson talked quite a bit about that. And you could probably go online to Public Works and look at the same organizational chart as we all got. And then a few legislative housekeeping agenda items for LAFCO and just, you know, good times. I did get a chance to do something different. I went fishing with one of the harbor commissioners on his boat. And it was interesting seeing how the commercial fishermen have to do things, how, you know, you can strictly observe, you can't fish. And so I thought that was good, and we got to talk a lot about the harbor. And then I did attend the LUCMR meeting as well. So that was my busy 2 weeks. Does anybody have any public comment on any of those items? Okay. Mr. Ogren, do you have anything you want to add?
President Lucy, in reference to your Sand District discussions and reclamation, Director Blackburn and I will be attending the meeting organized by Pismo Beach, a quarterly update with representatives of other agencies to hear what the update on those recycled water efforts are.
Great. I look forward to hearing that. Okay, so at this time I think it's consent agenda. Nope, yeah. Number 7, consent agenda items. We have a modification to the consent agenda. That is on the back of our agenda. So what was it, that the code was wrong or...
No, it's just the reference to what the closed session item was about.
Okay. So, yeah, whoever makes the motion, will you include?
What would be appropriate would be just to approve the consent agenda as amended.
Okay.
I'll make that motion.
After public comment.
Is Does anybody have any public comment for the consent agenda?
Ah, come on, tell me.
You had to do that.
I did.
You did. That's okay.
See, I know, Jeff almost grabbed the microphone. We were trying to...
He forgot.
We're competing for it.
He's a mic hog, that one.
Yeah. Okay, so...
It's because they haven't heard you sing.
I'll second the motion.
Because they have heard you sing.
As amended, correct?
As amended.
As amended.
Yes, and I think that's the second correct. Cause
do we need a roll call on this? No. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstained. 5-0. Ms. Matt, Mr. Guerrero.
Oh, I thought I made the motion.
Yeah. White. Made the motion.
Karen seconded, yeah. Director White.
All right. Mr. Ogren, oh, public comment. On item number 8, any business items, is the time for the public to speak on these items. Nothing? Okay. It's all yours, Mr. Ogren.
Madam President, both items 8A and IB8B, we've had a number of preliminary discussions with your board. So I'm going to keep my staff comments relatively brief tonight. On 8A, which is our update on California Water Board extended emergency regulations, within your staff report, there's some information that includes both the summary facts that the State Water Board publishes, as well as a PowerPoint presentation that the county had put together. And I'm going to summarize the relevancy of those to Oceano relatively briefly, because the emergency conservation regulations and the vast majority of the mandates in there are for urban water suppliers, those entities that are defined as urban water suppliers, and they either sell 3,000 acre feet per year of water or they have 3,000 connections. And as a smaller water system, Oceano CSD is not subject to the vast majority of those regulations. But I'm going to briefly describe what we are subject to and then why it's still relevant to look at those particular regulations. So the modifications to the conservation regulations as they apply to Oceano is, first off, the prior requirement to limit outdoor irrigation to 2 days per week has been lifted. It's been rescinded. I had reported previously that that might be the case, and in fact, the State Water Board did approve that. The conservation requirement of 25% has also been removed, and so we don't have a strict conservation requirement right now.
That we're...
And I'll move further into that discussion. Okay. The new requirement is that we are required to provide prompt notice to a customer whenever we believe that a leak may exist on the property, you know, at the property. Existing procedures for years, we've already, if we believe that we have information to indicate a leak, we already notify the property owners. That process occurs when we read the meters, because any meter reads that would show unusually high consumption, our crews go back out, they verify the meter read, they check to see whether or not they think that a leak might exist, and if that's the case, they'll put a door hanger on the property, or in some cases, especially if it seems like it's clear and immediate, they'll make phone calls. So all we've already been implementing those procedures for years and years, and the key right now is that we just need to create a log. So we'll create a log in order to document that, in fact, we are complying with the regulations. But that's going to be, you know, relatively minor additional step in comparison to what the district's already been doing. Consistent with the existing regulations, we'll be providing a report to the state in December on our conservation levels and our continuing conservation, promotion of conservation. And the most significant thing that your board has approved is the conservation-oriented rate structures. the tiered rate structures, and so we'll just notify them that those are going to continue. With regard to the rest of the regulations, they do in fact include a provision in there that expects the urban water suppliers to also develop conservation-oriented rate structures, and if due to conservation they've been losing money, then the State Water Board expects them to go back to their ratepayers and make up for those revenue losses. We know that there's some local agencies that have been experiencing some significant revenue losses. Certainly that's throughout the state, and the viability of operations gets challenging if you're losing a lot of money. So there's a couple of important messages in the regulations that the State Water Board is sending to all of the agencies, and thankfully your board has already taken action on those particular items. The other point that I want to discuss here is that for the urban water suppliers whose conservation requirements range, but there are 25% plus or minus depending on a number of factors, but those conservation requirements were essentially dictated by the state previously. And in the modified regulations, they've established a standard under which agencies get to determine what their own conservation requirement needs to be. That was based on a lot of feedback that the State Water Board got from agencies throughout California, because obviously some agencies are in a better water situation if they have better drought contingency plans and have a better diversified portfolio, and other agencies are at greater risk. And so the state created guidelines on how to determine your conservation target. And that is really what the County of San Luis Obispo included in their PowerPoint presentation. To summarize it, though, I also handed out a sheet or that has a front and back. And what they are is the county's estimate of Lopez water supplies and state water supplies over the three-year period that's used to determine conservation efforts. The county also published one on the Nacimiento Water Project, but obviously we don't participate in the Nacimiento Water Project. And real quickly, with regard to the Lopez supply, the analysis shows that as of October 1st of 2016, the county projects that there will be 9,850 acre-feet in storage, which is a little less than 20%. So the projection is to drop from approximately the 28% that Tony cited during his operations report down to about 20% on October 1st. And with the existing commitments, it means that on October 1st, the projection is all the water in the lake is committed either to local agencies or to downstream releases, or it's part of the minimum pool, except for 25 acre feet of water. And evaporation might take care of that 25 acre feet, I don't know. But essentially all of the water behind Lopez right now has been allocated out, and we have water of 700 acre feet of that amount already in storage in Oceano's name. But for the next 3 years, the regulations state that the county, or whoever operates a wholesale water supply or a lake, has to use precipitation estimates based on 2013 through 2015. The idea being is as we look out 3 years in the future, the assumption has to be that it's going to be dry. And based on that analysis, the county estimates that the inflow into the reservoir over the next 3 years will only be 3,435 acre feet, which is far less than even an annual allocation of the agencies combined. And in sum total, over the three-year period, agencies can expect about 25% of what their normal water allocation would be. So that is a significant reduction in supply, but that's the quantity that agencies have to use to determine how much water are we going to get from Lopez over the next 3 years, and then to what degree do we need to conserve with those lesser numbers. So the State Water Board, again, moved from trying to dictate certain conservation measures or conservation targets and instead develop guidelines that they expect agencies to follow in determining their own conservation. Similarly, on the State Water Project, since the county is the provider of state water, They provided estimates over that three-year period, and for State Water, their estimate was that for, especially Oceano, that 100% of our contracted allocation of 750 acre-feet would be available each year, 2,250 acre-feet available over the three-year period. And the combined two sources then would indicate that Oceano certainly is in a good situation, that our conservation efforts, the community's conservation efforts themselves, would require no additional, you know, levels of conservation based on these regulations. And in fact, the calculations would be that Oceano doesn't need to quite conserve as much as they have been conserving. But that's a double-edged sword, because if you run calculations and then Mother Nature decides that she doesn't want to cooperate, she still rules. And so we want to still encourage conservation, but I think a little bit of the message to the community is that if somebody wanted to have a backyard garden or do something and was very careful with the conservation efforts, that, you know, that's okay at this point in time in Oceano. So the community has been doing a great job in conservation, above and beyond what they need to do, but we want to still continue to encourage conservation. I think the importance of those conservation rates and the tiered rate structure then is been both successful. They need to continue, and at the same time, community's done a good job, and if somebody wants to do a little bit more watering, certainly it's within the realm. The two-day per week restrictions have been lifted, and the technical requirement or the regulatory requirement for 25% conservation has been lifted as well.
That's nice to hear that if you want to do a vegetable garden and or you want to water an extra day a week, it's safe to do that at this point.
Yeah, I'm comfortable that Oceano is safe to do that. I should remind that the restrictions about no water running off into the street, you know, no washing off sidewalks and driveways. If you're going to wash your car or do anything else with the hose, you have to have the end has to turn off immediately. You can't let it run while you go back to the spigot. So those basic requirements continue, and I would expect they're going to continue for all time.
Okay. I was just going to ask if the changes could be put on the website. I know we sent out a mailer or some information when the restrictions started. Right?
That's a good idea. Then we can provide an update, and Celia will make a note to make sure that I do that.
Thank you.
And our annual water quality report, I think, was in that same notice.
No, we just sent out the annual water quality report in the most recent bills that went out.
All right. Well, that's good news, and kind of, like you said, double-edged sword. Can we talk about Lopez for a minute?
Yes.
How many acre feet does that dam hold, theoretically?
It's pretty darn close to 50,000 acre feet.
So without the evaporation, it's down to 25 acre feet of a buffer. Would that be safe to say?
As of October 1st, the county's estimate of uncommitted water behind the reservoir is 25 acre feet.
Okay, so I look at the other entities that consume off that reservoir, and there's some that are very thirsty, and groundwater is their only sources. Is there a risk of overpumping off of Lopez?
Well, I know that a number of the other agencies have increased their groundwater pumping, recognizing that Lopez cutbacks. You know, we've already started to get cutback on Lopez, and that's going to continue. So there has been an increase in pumping from some of the other agencies. The chart, to provide a little bit of an illustration then, you know, in number terms, Oceano, our water available over that three-year total, including the water we already have in storage, of 944 acre-feet, is over three times our annual allocation. Out of the other agencies, County Service Area number 12 has between 2 and 3 years of its annual allocation. Pismo Beach has, again, between 2 and 3 years of its annual allocation. Grover Beach has a little bit more than 1 year of its annual allocation. And so October 1st of 2016 to November of 2017 is about where Grover's at. Arroyo Grande has a little bit more than 1 year of allocation as well. So the, you know, the agencies that have the more diversified water portfolio certainly are the ones who have a longer supply, with Oceano having more than 3 years of its allocation, Pismo between two and three, and the others is a hair over one. So we got to expect that they are going to either need some emergency supplies, as we've previously discussed, state water might come into that, or you know, they're going to be increasing groundwater pumping. As a side note, we heard within the last 24 hours that Diablo is going to be decommissioned, and the deal that the county had been working on with PG&E for desalinated water supplies is now off the table. It means that recycled water and the need for recycled water is
more important than ever.
Yeah, more important than ever. Diablo water had already been determined to not be an emergency supply, but it was a new supply that was estimated to be online as early as 2 years. Recycled water cannot be online within 2 years, but it indicates a need to start fast-tracking that project.
So, not to be selfish, but I'm going to be. If we have two close, two purveyors up there at Lopez that only have 1 year and they don't have a backup water supply, well, I can't speak for Arroyo Grande, but my understanding is Grover Beach has Lopez and they have groundwater, and the groundwater is, you know, we all know it's very touchy and iffy, and so... Is our water safe in that reservoir, our 3 years?
The amount that's allocated to us is certainly safe in terms of it's going to be allocated to us and not allocated to somebody else. And that's basically guaranteed through the low reservoir response plan that everybody mm-hmm. approved. What we need to take care of in the next year especially is... we don't want our water to be stranded in the reservoir. And what I mean by that, if everybody else draws their water out and ours is the last, well, are we going to be able to get it through the treatment facilities or not?
Right.
And so so that's always a question that has to be addressed. Now, your board's decision to buy drop-buffer allocation through State Water Project then does provide the ability to draw on some of that Lopez water and then start saving water in San Luis Reservoir. Okay. So we might see some shifts in some of our water strategies in the coming year. The other thing in order to address that, to prevent water being stranded behind Lopez, is that the plumbing between the State Water Project and the Lopez Water Treatment Plant, it's all very much in the same proximity, literally just hundreds mm-hmm. of feet behind. And so from a operational standpoint, one option to make sure water isn't stranded in Lopez is to connect the state water supply up into the headworks for the Lopez water treatment plant. Mm-hmm. Because the risk of stranded water is that there's just not enough water from Lopez in order to work through the treatment plant and get sent down. But if you blend state water with Lopez water prior to putting it into the treatment plant, then you have sufficient flows. And it actually makes the treatment process at Lopez easier because much of your water is already going to be treated. And so that blended quality is going to be a lot better. And that's kind of important, too, because as a reservoir like Lopez starts getting lower and lower and lower, you can expect that your water quality is going to get worse and worse and worse. The temperature of the water is going to go up. Algae and other types of water quality challenges are going to increase. So there's, you know, really two strategies. One is to start drawing on our Lopez allocation sooner and start storing more water in state water in San Luis Reservoir. The second is the physical modifications up at Lopez. And so we'll be following up with the county on both of those options as the drought continues.
And I was a strong advocate for putting our state water in Lopez because of the evaporation rates versus San Luis Reservoir, where evaporation rates are higher.
Yeah.
Because it's much, much hotter. So now I'm like, oh, no. But also, too, is Oceano bought into state water a long, long time ago. And so, you know, you mentioned the two entities possibly buying into state water. And how would that kind of look? Because if you take a community like Oceano, who's been buying state water for 20 years at approximately, not absolute, about $1 million a year, you know, give or take a couple hundred thousand, you're looking at $20 million that this little community has put into the infrastructure and those pipes and getting that water down to this community. And so how is it that you can not invest in state water, but down the road draw down state water?
In order for any agency in San Luis Obispo County to be able to obtain water from the State Water Project, there's existing contractual requirements for it to be a uniform contract, which is basically the same as our contract. Recognizing the number of years that have passed, it would seem improbable that a uniform contract can be developed unless there's a significant buy-in, and then in that case, Oceano could expect some money back from a buy-in. That's if a new entity wanted to buy a permanent allocation.
That wouldn't be defined as an emergency use only? Well,
there's either one of two ways in order to get state water. One is as a permanent or one on an emergency basis. So as on a permanent basis, I think it would be improbable because the buy-in cost would be significant, plus the existing capacity of the pipelines has essentially been full, you know, pretty fully allocated. Under emergency water, that contract would be clearly different than our existing contract, and so that would require waivers, similar to all the waivers that got approved when the low reservoir response plan or our water exchange in 2014 happened. In that case, it really means that all of the existing state water subcontractors are going to have to agree with the county in terms of how that water would be delivered within, you know, on an emergency basis within San Luis Obispo County. And the two primary issues I see with that is pricing, how much would the emergency water be cost, and to what extent would existing state water subcontractors get reimbursed or get a portion of that revenue stream, recognizing the investment of, you know, tens of millions of dollars. And then the second issue is the priority of who gets to sell water. So Oceano doesn't have any water in storage in San Luis Reservoir right now, but some of the other agencies do. And so, for example, Morro Bay, which has a desal plant, and they have water in storage in San Luis Reservoir. If they wanted to sell some of their water, then should they be given a higher priority over the county's excess allocation, for example? I don't know whether Morro Bay would or not, but that's a policy. So two primary policies that I see in terms of emergency water contracts and the need for waivers would be, one, pricing, and then two, the priority of which water is sold first. And
that helps. Thank you for explaining that. Does anybody have any questions?
No, I just have a comment. I would like to bring up maybe the idea of the board giving direction to President Lucy to continue the efforts and to get for this board to, not President Lucy specifically, but for this board to get behind the efforts of water reclamation for the South County Sanitation District. I was always pushing that since 2012, and this is a torch that needs to be continued to be carried, and I know that you believe in water reclamation as well. $4.5 million gallons a day going out the outfall.
Yeah.
$4.5 million gallons a day.
Day.
Every day.
Every day.
Guaranteed.
And so whether we recapture all of that or significant portions, I think the water reclamation with our ground basin depleting, Lopez Lake depleting, always a challenge with state water. Fortunately, we're getting more this year than last year, but the last couple of years with, you know, anticipated 5% delivery rates, we have to preserve our resources. And so I would defer to Paavo on this, but I'd like to bring this up to the board to maybe, you know, that this board is pushing the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, of which we are a member agency, to keep moving in that direction because, frankly, we can't afford not to.
Right. And just to take it a step further, maybe it's a good time for Mr. Gerhardt to come and talk to the board or get to know us or something like that on the San District. Can we put that on the agenda for the future agenda?
Yeah, and considering both that suggestion as well as Director Guerrero's comments, my thought is that, as previously mentioned, Director Blackburn and I are going to be participating in the PISMO project discussions mm-hmm. tomorrow. I did meet with Mr. Gerhardt today, Mr. Huebner today, Gerhardt Huebner, and we did talk about the regional approach, and, you know, so clearly he has been reviewing and getting up to speed on the recycled water efforts. My thought is that if we see at tomorrow's meeting that there is starting to develop some policy issues associated with recycled water, that could be good timing to have Mr. Huebner come, as well as for your board to start considering some initial policy decisions with respect to recycled water. So I want to play it a little bit by ear in terms of how the discussions go tomorrow, but certainly I envision in a near future having an agenda item.
And in an ideal world, the Sand District would make reclamation a priority mm-hmm. to the same degree as they've put into redundancy.
And I
that
was
would
always,
be the best.
I was always concerned that the redundancy monies were going to be spent that could have also, that the analysis was not being done and whether or not that overlapped with reclamation, because it's just a fiduciary duty to the ratepayer and finite resources to make sure that you consider that option.
And I think that's good that the ratepayers should contact the Sand District and say, we need to start talking and designing a reclamation project for that fresh water that's going out. Well, I don't know how fresh it is, but it's
it's water.
Not salt. Right.
Well, in terms of the relationship between the redundancy project and reclamation and recycled water, some of the what I hear from Mr. Huebner today was that his concern is the timing of financing packages, because if you've got a permit and financing development for redundancy, and then it overlaps permitting and timing and financing for reclamation, it can create more challenges for him, and that's understandable. The solution is, how can we get the recycled water efforts to pick up the pace and move faster? And that need, from his facilities planning standpoint, is consistent with this news that Diablo is not going to be an option and the continuation of the drought on the Central Coast. So we had some discussion and, you know, kind of brainstormed a few concepts on how to start fast-tracking it. And so I think that would be more in a good discussion in the near future.
Right, and particularly for the Sand Board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, great. All right. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to add to this discussion or contribute or anything? No? All right. Mr. Ogren?
So with respect to President Lucy and members of the board on item 8B, a review of the May 31, 2016 budget status and policy direction on the preliminary two-year budget for fiscal years 2016-17 and 2017-18. My comments on the current year's budget status will be very, very brief. Next week at the special meeting, there's only one budget adjustment that I need to bring to your board, and that was for the final payment of the fire engine for Five Cities Fire Authority. When the budget was originally adopted, Director Vice President White had indicated that she noticed that that was not included. It was omitted. So just not a surprise. I was moving throughout the year wondering whether or not we might have some cost savings that would cover that particular cost anyhow. Did not. So that's about $5,700, and I'll need to bring a budget adjustment next week during the special meeting on that. Other than that, the budgets are tracking consistent. They're all tight, but they're still tracking consistent. And the one number that is the most unknown number at this point in time is what will our final water sales revenues be, because we know that the Prop 218 rate increase incorporated a 20% conservation factor. We know the community has been conserving at a little bit more than 25%. We would expect some shortfall in water sales revenues. There's two points that are important relating to that. One is that we have gotten a lot of more revenues from new development than we anticipated. So I expect that our total revenues will exceed the budget amount because of revenues from new development, or close to. The challenge with that is that we wanted to have the revenues from new development dedicated specifically to infrastructure. And so a shortfall, if we have to use some of those new development revenues at the end to make up for losses in water sales revenue, it would reduce our ability to dedicate those revenues to infrastructure. However, on the operating side of expenditures, we're also seeing some significant cost savings, predominantly with savings on state water as well as savings on some of our pumping costs, since we're not pumping very much. And so the best that I can say right now is that it appears that if we have a shortfall on water sales revenues, our savings in the operating budget will cover that, and that hopefully then most, if not all, of the new development revenue will continue to be able to be dedicated to infrastructure. We will know those final numbers once we close out the year, and that is what I bring to your board during the adoption of the final budget, which is prior to September 1st. The preliminary budget, that's going to be the purpose of the special meeting next week, is really to adopt the revenue plan and the expenditure plan. But closing out this year, and how does it affect reserves, and how does it affect dedication of funding for things like infrastructure, that is going to be a detail that we address then in the August meeting, which we've already, it will be the second meeting in August prior to September 1st. So a quick summary again on current year's budget. It's tracking very well. We will need a relatively minor budget adjustment for that final engine payment for the Five Cities Fire Authority. And the revenue side of the water budget has some uncertainty associated with it, but it's covered either by new development revenue or more likely by cost savings on the operation side of water.
Just a quick question. Is the engine in the same year as the dispatch increase? The engine was a matching fund, right?
The fire engine?
Yeah.
Well, in this fiscal year, we're making the final payment on an engine that was purchased, I believe it was originally purchased by Arroyo Grande.
Okay.
No,
yeah.
It was Five Cities Fire Authority.
Okay.
Is the big one, right? Yeah. It's engine 5?
Well, and then now we're going to start with the new purchase.
Correct.
Of the new one. Yeah.
That engine was originally, it was about the one-year anniversary when it came in, and that was
okay.
A Five Cities Fire Authority purchase.
So they're both in the same year. The increase in dispatch and...
Oh, there was no increase in costs for that engine. That was just something I missed last year's budget. And during the budget discussions, Vice President White identified that.
Okay.
My response was, well, let's see if we can afford it through cost savings. And the fire department budget is pretty tight.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't have those cost savings, so now I need to come back with a final budget adjustment.
Okay, great. All right.
And then, so that's the current fiscal year. If there's no further questions, I can walk through the significant assumptions for the preliminary budget for the two-year budget. Prepared a two-year budget because we have previously discussed that, and your board provided the policy support and direction for that. So this is to provide... the final preliminary review of budget numbers before coming back next week and taking formal action. Before I jump forward, I want to make sure that Director Blackburn and Director Guerrero have an opportunity to make any preliminary comments, or if it's your preference to comment after I cover some of the major assumptions.
Yeah, I don't have any comments at this time.
You know, I'll pass. I'll just bring up, because I know that you're going to cover whatever I cover anyway.
That's pressure.
But I'll just bring up, we did speak about a few things on Monday. Obviously, one of the is the changing landscape in our legal fees the difference, the higher level of work that's being done now by legal. Also, that we do expect some of the decrease now that Ms. Cassiola is with that, because no pressure, Carrie, but we do expect some decrease in legal because of that. And then we discussed, as a matter of budgeting, some yearly things like having a yearly surplus declaration on some of our old equipment and just as a matter of house cleaning. And we talked about how the Henry Weinstock, since we're not utilizing his representation anymore, how that is going to change as well. But the report that Pavo, I'm going to say it in public, the report that Pavo wrote was very thorough, and this budget is tight. Pavo will go over it, and again, it's a two-year budget, which I think is appropriate. As we're moving into getting more professional each year, I think that that's a really good thing to do. So, Pavo.
So to initiate my comments, thank you, Matt, on a couple of items that we see as being associated with the budget, although not technically part of the budget. And as Director Guerrero had mentioned, that when we're addressing what are our surplus items or items that need to be disposed of, your board approved a number of items a couple months ago. But to make that as a routine part of, you know, the budgeting process I like that idea and the feedback from finance, because it just gets established in a schedule. And then it's the idea that it becomes routine and it gets done every year. The other thing that I got as a little bit of input from Mr. Huebner with the Sanitation District is that at last Wednesday's meeting, the Sanitation District Board approved a modified purchasing authority for the general manager. And he had indicated that it's their intent during the annual budgeting process to revisit purchasing authority as well. So I think that those are both good ideas to incorporate in the annual, you know, cycle that includes the budget, is addressing surplus declarations as well as the purchasing authority. And as your board deliberates after my comments, I can certainly bring a purchasing authority back when we address the final budget in August. I wouldn't have time to bring out back any sort of purchasing authority next Wednesday, because essentially we have to get that agenda package wrapped up tomorrow. But Mr. Huebner is also going to send me, you know, the boilerplates and what they did at the Sand District. So I like both of those being incorporated into the budget process.
And it was it was too low to be productive.
Wasn't it 7,500 per?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're going to 25,000. Is that?
Yeah, his was 5. Mine's 7,500.
Okay.
They're going to 25,000. That's what the county operates under. That's what, when Mr. Huebner was in Ventura, what he operated under. I think he indicated that's what Arroyo Grande operates under as well. So, I think it's a good time to revisit it for Oceano.
Plus, we have some grants coming in, and we can kind of guess what you need the authority, how much you're going to need on hand.
So in terms of the significant assumptions moving forward into our two-year budget, there are a couple of items that are not included, and I will proposing to bring those back at such time as we present agreements with the county. The first is the grant revenues from Proposition 1 for our water resource reliability program. And that funding was awarded around the end of 2015, early 2016. The Department of Water Resources has been awarding a lot of grants, and so it's been taking time between award date and actually getting grant agreements. And it was just about 2 weeks ago that the correspondence on developing the grant and getting the grant agreements together has finally picked up. And so the idea is in the next couple months we should be able to see a grant agreement from the county. The Department of Water Resources establishes a grant agreement with the county, and then the county turns around and establishes grant agreements with the local recipients, which in this case are Oceano, Templeton, and San Simeon. So the approach that I've taken is that when we bring back that grant agreement and we have those dollar amounts certain, then we'll make the budget adjustments for the use of those revenues and the expenditures. The second items that are not included are the costs for utility relocations, whether we incur them on the Highway 1 drainage project or for the Air Park Drive bridge replacement project. And both of those are also going to require interagency agreements. And once they're at a status to get there, our ability to estimate the costs associated with both are going to be much better. Because the county is going to want a deposit similar to the asphalt overlay project that just finished. And so, again, when we bring those agreements to your board for consideration, there will be a budget adjustment accompanying both of those items as well. On those projects, our district engineer, Doug Grosshardt, is actively engaged right now and working on them, and I would expect we'll have some pretty good cost estimates when the time comes.
Do we have a time estimate on that bridge?
So on both projects, the county was hoping to initiate construction in 2017, but that's maybes and it may be 2018. The bridge project, much more likely in 2018 because they don't have a coastal development permit. It's original jurisdiction for the Coastal Commission, and they're not certain when they will get on the agenda for the Coastal Commission. So it's possible in 2017. They are anticipating that's going to be more likely 2018. The drainage project, they would also like to initiate in 2017, and that probably seems more likely. In terms of general costs, I would anticipate that the drainage project, if we have costs to incur, and legal counsel is working with me in addressing that, I would anticipate that that's going to be less costly, and the one that's more likely in 2018 would be more costly.
All right. Thank you.
So those are two of the assumptions of items that are not included in the budget, but the plan for bringing them forward for budget adjustments when the agreements with the county are ready for your presentation to your board. In terms of the rest of the assumptions on the basis for the budget numbers that are in front of you, is the general fund revenues, primarily property taxes, are sufficient to pay the cost of lighting and fire. We have the numbers from Five Cities Fire Authority for the upcoming year, and for the subsequent year, I budgeted about a 2.5%, 3% increase. We're going to have to wait and see what that actually is, but I did assume some increase in Five Cities Fire Authority budgets for the second year. As I mentioned before, on water sales revenues and some uncertainty on those exact numbers, I continue to include water sales revenues at the amount that is the basis for the Prop 218 ordinance adopted in April of 2013, including the pass-through costs for inflation and contracted wholesale water costs. So we're going to have to continue to look at those more closely as well. But I will remind your board that when those Prop 218 rates were adopted at a 20% conservation factor, we specifically talked about, well, what happens if conservation isn't at 20%? If it's at less than 20% and we generated additional revenues, your board adopted a policy that those additional revenues would be spent on conservation projects or programs. If conservation was greater than the 20% and we had a revenue shortfall, then we identified the thing that we would have to address that impact, and we might have to adjust them slightly in order to get to the revenue targets that were adopted. I don't see that need right now, but again, we're going to have to closely monitor, and the water sales revenues have been projected based on that Prop 218 ordinance that your board adopted in April of 2015. With respect to the impact on water sales revenues in order to fund the drought buffer program for state water. At the previous meeting, your board approved drought buffer subject to being able to fund it in the budget, and if it wasn't funded in the budget, then would we take the 750 acre feet per year of drought buffer and reduce it to an amount that could be funded in the budget? This two-year budget anticipates full funding at current estimates of that 750 acre feet of drought buffer. And in the second year, the wholesale contract pass-through costs would amount to approximately $1.50 per customer per month. So that's a slight increase. When we compare the water resource reliability of the drought buffer program to what other options are, it's still by far the least expensive approach to improving the reliability of the district's water portfolio. But
it helps us to sleep better at night, knowing that we have just another source of water.
And so I made sure to address your board's conditions and did that estimate and shared it with the Finance Committee. And so we have incorporated the full 750 acre feet of drought buffer into the two-year budget. The next significant assumption, which is to me really, really good news for this district, for Oceano, is that our new facilities fund revenues and the action policy direction that your board approved with respect to the funding of the sheriff's building and interfund loans results in next year's budget, the two-year budget, includes the start of fully reimbursing all the interfund loans. So the money that the water fund owes to the general fund and the money that the water fund owes to the garbage fund, they won't all be paid off in 1 year, but the projections that I previously provided to the board are in the budget, and at that dollar amount, we will be on the track to pay those off. It might take a few years, but that amortized amount is wholly included in it. So, the good news is in about 2 years' time, we've turned from having a deficit in the water fund to now having the ability to fund our drought buffer program and to fund the repayment of the interfund loans that had previously been made. So to me, that's a significant improvement in the fiscal health of the district. Budgets are still tight. So again,
good. But we're in the black.
Yeah, in the black.
we can breathe.
The next significant assumption is with regard to salary and wage adjustments. And this was one that had me concerned, especially for the second year, because the memorandum of understanding adopted with SEIU provided for a phase-in of wage increases based on that salary survey.
Right.
And in the second year of this two-year budget, they would be fully phased in. And I had some concerns about the ability to, what kind of fiscal impact would that have? But those wage adjustments are fully incorporated in the two-year budget as well. What that had, though, is that there is an effect. We were able to do it. The assumption previously was that the field crews, Tony, Jason, Casey, spent 80% of their time on water and 20% of their time on sewer. And that's been modified to be two-thirds water, 66.6666%, and one-third sewer. The reason, so that works from a budgetary standpoint, but it's reinforced from an operating standpoint because the sewer fund is going to be the recipient of the repayment of the general fund loans, and so it's going to have the augmented revenue stream. And based on prior board direction, we're going to be able to initiate our work on the sewer lateral program.
Good.
In the sewer budget, I should also mention that I've included $50,000 for each of the 2 years in order to provide professional services assistance to the crews. The nature of that type of work would be some rough surveying of where the right-of-way lines are. Not detailed, but at least at street corners so that Tony and Jason and Casey can gain good line of sight of where new cleanouts need to be. But the point is that we can initiate the lateral maintenance program without a Prop 218 rate increase right up front. We can embark upon identifying the properties that don't have cleanouts and therefore know how many cleanouts need to be constructed. And we'll be able to do some video of the condition of some of the existing laterals. So we're going to be able to make a good initial effort without any rate increase. And that then will be able to provide better analysis of what is the long-term cost going to be. Because when I sought your board policy direction earlier this year, you know, we were working on general cost estimates. And by being able to initiate the program and gain a better understanding of you know, where the cleanouts are and where they're not and where are pipes in bad condition and where are they in good condition, we're going to be able to refine the estimates before doing a Prop 218. And the relative health of the sewer fund, will, I anticipate, will be that at such point in time that we do need to propose a rate increase on sewer, we should be able to phase it in over multiple years as opposed to having to do a rate increase and hitting everybody up front. So again, in terms of salary and wage adjustments, we've been able to fully incorporate the wage adjustments approved through the MOU and SEIU. It resulted in a shift of hours from water to sewer, but that is also consistent with the need to initiate on the lateral program. It's always good when budgets match up with what's needed to be done, you know, in reality. The
so just a quick question. Yes. So does that physically change the schedule or the jobs that the guys are doing now? So will a portion of their time be spent on sewer? I mean, do you break it down that far?
Yes. In fact, when they work every day, they track time spent on water versus time spent on sewer. And so they will be dedicating more time on sewer. The one thing we have to address on their maintenance of the water, and as Tony mentioned, we have like a mobile home park where we're doing work on the park. And we really need to address that from a policy standpoint because if it's within a mobile home park, it really is a mobile home park that needs to be maintaining their own system.
Yeah, and you have 150 residents in there.
Yeah.
However many. That's a lot.
As we embark on the lateral program, the question is, in the long term, is are we going to ultimately need a fourth member of a crew? We've previously had a fourth member of a crew, but again, that will be addressed as we proceed with the lateral program and we look at what the costs and the funding requirements will be.
Okay.
Next significant assumption is, can't forget this one. In the budget on the money that's been allocated to help obtain professional services to augment staff work on the lateral program. The preliminary budget that we bring to you next week, I do need to show that is assumed canceling some reserves out of the sewer fund. It's about 30-some thousand in the first year, second year, 20-some thousand in the other year. And so I need to make sure to include and show that cancellation of reserves. But again, with the enhanced revenue stream from the sewer fund and its existing reserve status, that's very much a possibility. The alternative is your board can say, no, reduce those professional support services so there's no cancellation of reserves. And I'll hope not for that direction. But respect it if it comes forward, nevertheless. Next significant assumption is, overall, my inflationary assumption for the second year, I'm working with about 2.5%. There's a lot of situations, though, where in a if you look at the spreadsheets, it's not 2.5%. So State Water and Lopez Water, I'm using estimates provided by the county. And then if we're in like $1,000 line items and we only spent $600 this year, I probably just kept it at $1,000 again. The general idea is for the second year, I'm basing them on a 2.5% inflationary assumption, unless they were relatively minor or unless I had better information than that.
So you raised the ones that are just flat-lined the second year, did you increase them by 2.5% automatically?
If they were relatively minor, I may have kept it like at 1,000 to 1,000. And then some, I might have gone like 1,500 and just rounded up to 2,000.
All right.
So the general basis is 2.5%. But on a line item by line item basis, and the worksheets provide.
And I could see that in the coming below budget, but if they were coming in or above budget.
And then the last point that I need to make, and of course it was Director Blackburn who identified it, was with respect to legal costs, and in the water budget. I actually double listed it. There's a line item for legal, and then there's a line item for Santa Maria groundwater litigation, both at the same amount. So I'll be eliminating one of those and just put it into designations. But I
don't tell Chuck.
My thing would be to leave the Santa Maria Ground Valley because it identifies it out. That's my thinking on that.
The as Mr. Guerrero had pointed out. The legal costs have been increased from the prior year, but less than what we actually incurred in the current year.
Mm-hmm.
The incurrence of legal costs in the current year, as an example, because of staff vacancies, the development of the records retention policy was done 100% by Mr. Minery. If we had been fully staffed, it's something that I would have been substantially involved in. So that's a good example of some work that Mr. Minery did for us this year that I simply couldn't get to because of staff vacancies. And I think that it's important for individuals to understand that to the extent that the legal budget is higher, well, we had that basic savings on our salary side, right? So we had salary savings because of the vacancy, and then that provided us the ability to proceed with some work and have Mr. Minery do it. So it worked out good in the current year, but next year's assumption is going to have legal go down. Basically, it's about halfway between what we budgeted and what we actually incurred this year. Plus, on the water fund, the savings from not having NOSMIN is clearly going to be beneficial.
Yeah, because we don't have an expensive triple the price attorney in Sacramento or someplace, and Mr. Minery, you've handled that excellently. I can't thank you enough for all your contributions to the Santa Maria groundwater, really. I know you've gone above and beyond on that.
And those points cover the significant assumptions associated with the budget. I'd be glad to answer any questions or review any of the other details that your board might want to address.
I do have a question. I didn't think of this Monday. The on-again, off-again, mostly off-again project that started prior to my 5 years ago when I got here was called codification. And should we budget something on that, or should we just rip the Velcro off and
rip the Band-Aid off.
Rip the Band-Aid off, I mean, yeah, and just figure we're not going to have to do it.
We have the records retention.
I wouldn't budget anything for it, and here's why, is we're embarking on those efforts, like, now. And Jeff and I have talked about it. I think what happened with the prior district efforts that were a misstep is that the codification came back to the board for approval, and the codification is not really an approval effort. It's a compilation of resolutions and ordinances and policies that the board had previously adopted.
Right.
And that work product that was previously performed, the prior legal counsel, I called them. They sent me all the electronic copies so that we can work with them. Mr. Seamus was very, you know, kind in providing all that information. So we have, you know, already a good start on it. The initiation of those efforts is starting now with respect to our HR policies. So, you know, first day in talking with Ms. Cassiola and staff, we have this new training program, Target Solutions. It's a cloud-based software program. Celia, Nicole, and I all went through the training program, and we got our letters of certification that we got trained in it. Well, now we have to start implementing it. And one of the first things that agencies do in implementing this is new employee orientation. So our district does not have the new employee orientation that we should have as state of the art. And so Ms. Cassiola is the business and accounting manager and primarily responsible for some of the HR stuff. We'll be working with Nicole in order, and Nicole's been doing a wonderful job of just getting everything set up for Carrie to come on board. You know, some of the basics are, do you have the I-9s and do you have the, you know, legal paperwork that the government's federal estate agencies require? And then do you have your HR policies so that they can review them and the new employee can sign them and say, I understand the HR policies and I promise to abide by them? Well, we don't have that good set of HR policies. And so Carrie and Nicole will be going through what the boards have previously adopted as our HR policies and comparing it to this preliminary codification that was already done, and essentially take that HR side of it and say, okay, that's the first portion of it that we're going to tackle. And then we'll break it into the other components, like rules and regulations associated with the water and the wastewater system. That one would probably want, that Nicole would more work more closely with Tony in reviewing and me and Tony. And so we're going to be breaking out, and we're going to start working on it in the very near future, with the idea is we're going to break it into logical components, first HR, and then whether rules and regulations are next on our operations or whether it's a different component of it, we'll strategize. But I'm pretty well confident that we're going to be able to handle it in-house with, you know, obviously work with Mr. Minnery and stuff. But the work that Mr. Seamus had done previously is a very good start, and I don't see the need for additional budget money at this point in time.
Sounds good to me.
I'll not plan on attending any meetings for that.
You're not?
No.
Okay. And you know, as we embark, I can do an update for your board. But again, I don't see that as being an action item of your board. That's more of staff and legal counsel's obligation to put it together consistent with what was previously adopted.
In my recollection, there was a significant amount of work done later on by Carol Ann when she was with us, Pardo, putting them into folders and such. And that was,
yeah. And
do you remember that?
No. Yeah.
So to reinforce the process or the points on the process, though, when the state of California adopts legislation, whatever the assembly bill or the Senate bill is, then it's the attorneys and the staff at the state that figure out how it gets codified. Mm-hmm. That codification does not go back to the legislature for approval.
Correct.
Right.
You know, if it did, it would almost give the opponents to the legislation a second crack at killing it, right? The legislative decisions have already been made. It's our job to make sure that they're properly codified.
Thank you.
I have one question. On the reserves, I guess what I'm thinking is the backhoe. When I saw under equipment fund, I didn't see that anything had been budgeted for anything new, right? And I know that our backhoe is, it's embarrassing, to put it lightly. And field crew had mentioned this to me 4 or 5 years ago, and so I wanted to know if there was some way we could set up a reserve or make it a future goal. I haven't spoke to the staff about it in 4 or 5 years.
But I think what we do is a capital replacement fund and for all of our equipment and such. And we talked about that. Did we implement? I can't remember when we purchased the new vehicle that we're setting aside certain portions towards the purchase of the next one. I thought we did.
Yeah, and so the equipment fund was established, and it has the one truck. I can certainly do some evaluations on a backhoe and include something in the preliminary budget on that. The idea is that it's the funding of the backhoe will need to come out of existing reserves because the budget as presented is balanced, so we don't have revenues to cover it. But considering the cost of a backhoe, which, you know, they're not inexpensive, but they're not also, you know, they're not fire engines. Right? So do I believe that we have sufficient reserves to be able to cover the cost of obtaining a new backhoe? And yeah, I believe we
or
have
a used one. Just something.
A new backhoe for us. But yeah, we certainly have sufficient reserves. And what I can do for the preliminary budget is include a rough cost estimate. And then during the year, what Tony and I can do is evaluate what's the most cost-effective approach in taking for a new backhoe and bring that back to your board. My point being, though, is that it's going to have to, my assumption is going to have to be that it's funded out of reserves. The repayment then of those reserves would end up going into the equipment fund for the long-term, you know, equipment replacement program. I feel comfortable with that approach. We won't do anything in terms of acquiring a new backhoe until after the final budget is adopted in August, because it's in August after we've closed out our year that your board really evaluates the status of reserves. So in the change to the preliminary budget, I can include a backhoe. You know, we can note that it's got to be funded from reserves. And then at the adoption of the final budget, if your board determines that, well, we really don't feel comfortable with using the reserves, then in the adoption of the final budget, it would be deleted. And again, between now and then, we won't take any efforts to actually purchase a backhoe, so we won't make any financial commitments. And that, I think, would be the best approach to incorporating it into the budget, and then the final decision would be made in August.
Okay.
Is a backhoe what is needed, or is there something else that's needed worse than a backhoe?
Tony, I would anticipate that the backhoe is probably higher on your priority list.
The backhoe is from 1981. So okay. it has a few years on it for that type of a piece of equipment.
So if you didn't have a backhoe, then we'd have our guys out there with shovels digging a trench.
You'd rent one.
We'd be renting it.
it's all time consuming, and depending on the time of the day, if you can rent them. But we still, you know, we still use shovels. We still use our jetter to excavate also. And we do use the backhoe to excavate.
How often do you use the backhoe?
We were using it today, to give an example.
Like once a week, every day?
It just varies on what we're going after. If we're, you know, doing water projects or if we're doing sewer projects, you know, like you said about the budget, you know.
But it's something you use a lot.
It is utilized, yes.
Yeah.
Definitely once a week.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Also in the sewer lateral program, discussions that Tony and I have had, that to the extent that properties need cleanouts, if he's going to be installing cleanouts, he's going to be using a backhoe a lot.
Yeah.
This past year or so, we did have to have some maintenance work done on the existing backhoe because it's hydraulics or something. Not sure exactly what the mechanical problem was, but it kind of got a limpy arm there and it couldn't lift very much. So so it's old. It's had some maintenance work on it. And there is a question of.
It's like us. It's a rotator cuff.
Yeah. So I'm not a mechanic. In addressing equipment, I'll also mention that in the next couple months, we have a generator. And it's not going to comply with air pollution quality control standards at the end of the year. And what Tony
does now, that it won't at the end of the year.
Right, because the regulations and the replacement requirements for it come up at the end of the year. To replace that generator is really cost prohibitive.
Like $2 million or something.
Well, no, but it's a lot of money. And the point is, Tony's research with APCD, the ability to pay a one-time fee, I'll loosely use the word fee, in order to get approval to continue to use it. And I just don't want to make that determination at a staff level. I think it's important that your board makes that determination because technically it is going to be a violation of air pollution control standards. We use it so infrequently. I mean, what, less than 20 hours a year, Tony?
Oh, my God. Currently less than 10 hours a year.
Yeah.
Ooh, just for the pumping station when electricity goes off?
It's a pneumatic jackhammer.
Oh.
So it just depends on if we have to jackhammer, if we need the jackhammer. A lot of times we can cut up streets or asphalts and lift it with the backhoe, and you don't need the jackhammer. It's a tier one motor, so it's going to be a non-compliance NON.
Well, our next backhoe, continue that discussion, could have a jackhammer attachment to it, right?
Absolutely, and then it doesn't require an APCD permit. But also a service truck, you can have hydraulic jackhammers that don't require that APCD permit that we're currently paying for that jackhammer trailer-mounted one.
I think that'll be important to know. We don't need it tonight, but for the decision making, whether we pay that tax or fine, whatever you want to call it, versus upgrading the equipment, that's going to be a reasonable upgrade anyway. And I don't know what it costs. I mean, I don't want to spend $20,000 fixing a $500 problem. But
and that's the point: is that the emergency? But Tony, don't run away yet. it would be very expensive to replace it. I'm trying to recall that in your discussions with the Air Pollution Control District. Is the tax, fine, fee, whatever it's called, is that a one-time charge for its continued use or an annual charge?
Correct. It would be a one-time use, and I'll do a little bit more communication with them. During the last inspection, it was brought up, so I asked numerous questions, and it would be a one-time fee to continue to use this piece of equipment with restriction to hours. We currently do not exceed, and we could keep it in service another 4 years for a one-time fee. And it would be a notice of non-violation, you know, notice of violation. But since we are, you know, a disadvantaged community and we do not utilize it extensively, you know, less than 10 hours a year, it's the APCD goes off the whole county wide for their pollution, their air pollution. And we don't do hardly anything to it, you know, run that piece of equipment 10 hours a year.
I doubt we're going to have any other option other than to go that route, but I think that we're going to need to plan forward in the future, and that's the discussion.
One-time fee is an estimate of...
The one-time fee, you're looking at a $500. Yeah. And that piece of equipment runs anywhere from $20,000 to $25,000 because it is a trailer-mounted pneumatic jackhammer system.
So my numbers were right, a $20,000 fix for a $500 problem. Yeah.
Yes.
I like the $500.
That was lucky. I didn't know, but yeah, that's right.
The other option would be is to rent a jackhammer when needed.
The challenge for that, though, of course, if it's a Sunday morning,
right.
You know, and or what have you, and we're spending a lot of staff time, you know, going and getting it, and it may not be available.
So, again, I'll bring that back to your board for future consideration.
Okay, thank you.
Any other little sneaky things like that? Got any others, Tony?
Interpret that as other issues on an equipment wish list.
What's on your wish list? Not what do you think of your boss. What's on your wish list?
I enjoy my boss very much. As for a wish list, I've discussed that with my GM, you know, kind of a plan of attack for the future. And he has an idea of everything for an equipment fund and the route we'd like to go
And this is not a new discussion. We were talking about this, I think, a year ago, 2 years ago, of developing, and that's why when we purchased the truck, the new truck that we got, that was one of the reasons we started doing this, to start bringing this in, and when we take depreciation to put that in, to budget that for the next vehicle.
Absolutely.
And so we don't know. You know, we're not in the yard, and so we're relying on you to tell us.
Yes.
Sounds like it's in pretty good hands to me.
Yeah, and so what? Clearly, one of the higher priority items in the future would be a full service truck, mm-hmm. And that would have the ability with the ability to run pneumatic hammers off of that and provide more ability to. What, it would even have one of those little mini cranes on it, and
absolutely, just everything you need when you show up on the site and don't even run back to the yard to grab anything.
Great. We support that.
And so the unspoken strategy here on equipment replacement is that when we come back in August, and this is consistent with the direction I'm sensing from your board on backhoes, on the backhoe, is that because the budget is still relatively tight, if we have budgetary savings in 1 year, then I think it would be good to take that savings and to dedicate it for equipment replacement. It's a little bit difficult right now to make dedications for equipment replacement up front, but if, again, we're having budget savings, and we'll see where we stand in August, taking some of that saved money and dedicating it for future equipment replacement is what I would I was anticipating talking about in the August meeting.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you, Tony. All right, Mr. Ogren, do you have anything left in you to report on?
No formal action is required, but from the conversation for next week's item, I anticipate I'll make some modifications for the backhoe and then the one change associated with legal fees.
So can we keep this for next week, and if there's any modifications, we'll just swap out a page? Or
No, you don't need this, because we have to reformat it somewhat for the actual budget.
Yeah.
This included current year's analysis, as well as, you know, some additional columns on showing how each line item changed and everything, and so we'll be deleting or hiding those columns better stated in Excel. And Carrie's working on some other reformatting items that we might be able to get in there for next week.
All right. So we'll let your paper shredder do the shredding.
Okay. It's all recycled.
Is there any public comment on this topic? Does anybody have any questions? None? Okay. Well, you have a whole year to keep asking the questions. Oh, actually, 2 years. Okay, so. Now what? Hearing items? Are we on 9, right?
We're 9. Yeah.
Okay, no hearing items? We were going to ask the Sand District to come and talk, right? Would that be hearing items? No. Yes, the 29th is a hearing item.
Special meeting
on 29th. Mr. Huebner, that won't be a hearing item. That will be a future agenda item, as well as a letter to the county on, you know, the flooding and the waterway management program. The hearing item is next week for the adoption of the preliminary budget.
Right, but it's too late. Okay, so do you want to make an announcement on the hearing item?
We noticed it in the newspaper. It's for next Wednesday at 4 p.m. here at the Oceano Community Services Board of Directors meeting room.
Okay. Did anybody write to us this week? Did we get any written communication? Nobody likes us.
Thank goodness.
Well, they usually only just send us bad mail anyway.
I have no correspondence.
Any requests for public information?
Nope.
You're really pushing.
No. Oh, okay.
Again, on correspondence, the idea is bring things to your board that might relate to a future agenda item.
Any last-minute written correspondence? None? Okay. Anything for closed session? None? Okay. Future agenda items, we just discussed that. Future hearing items. Done with that. Okay. I'll do public comment.
I wanted to say something.
Okay.
I wanted to publicly thank our maintenance department for their efforts during the Saturday morning Triangle Park.
Oh, yes.
Triangle Park dedication in setting up and moving things around. I thought that was wonderful. I'm assuming it was who was it? It was
Jason.
Casey. Yeah, Jason.
No, Jason.
Yeah.
And Casey.
I miscalendared that. I intended to be there.
It was a very, very nice ceremony, and it's a pretty special little place.
And thank you to the Guyton's family for everything they do for our community. They're wonderful people.
It is the smallest park with the biggest heart, I swear. The park is only 10 by 12, maybe.
Maybe.
And the people that are dedicated to that little speck of dirt, it's just incredible. It's amazing. 40 years later, people showed up. So it's nice. Mr. Ogren was over there pulling weeds the last minute. You know.
And Cacho brought his flags that had flown over the state capitol to fly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the people that were there raising the flag 40 years ago were, some of them were again there to do it. It was a pretty neat little ceremony.
Yeah, it was. So thank you for remembering that, Karen. Yeah. So on that note, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.